Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, February 28th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a cloudy 44 degrees, but still feeling like we are entering spring here in upstate New York. Actually, I was just out there. I cut across to go get my last refill of coffee. And I noticed that it looks like a good part of the trees have buds on them. So I do think spring might actually be here. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Meds, Robo Role Models, Toxic Comment Detector, and Data Mining. And we talked about a bunch of things. We looked at a little bit of alternative experimentation I'm doing on myself and my mother with ginger and lactoferrin. But we also looked at the toxic comment detector and some data mining that Facebook is doing. Toxic comment detector was a Google project. It was a spinoff under Alphabet's called Jigsaw. And we also looked at Little Johnny, the warning about how robots and robot role models, we better be careful and we better create them carefully because it's has been seen that little Johnny will pick up characteristics from his new little robo buddy that he gets for his birthday next year. And it's very disturbing that children would be able to pick up elements of behavior from a robot. But it makes you wonder. We have also seen them do that with their friends on TV. And they pick up all the bad traits. Anyone who had a kid who they used to let watch SpongeBob will know that. I think SpongeBob is responsible for an entire generation of juvenile delinquents. It's just so rude. I mean, we've known this. Children are very impressionable. And as we give them up to all these other institutions, including school, and I can tell you, you know, when over Christmas and summer vacation, we have a little bit of extended time to be at home, I can tell you attitude and disciplinary problems are pretty minimal. You know, summertime, actually, we have a good time and we get along quite well. Where the trouble starts is where we got a little Miss Attitude who comes home from school, you know, who had little Miss Attitudes on the bus that she talked to or little Miss Attitudes at school. And it's just incredible what kind of a personality difference it can create. Not just in a child, but I mean, even a friend, maybe someone you haven't seen in a while who has a new friend who happens to not be such a good influence. Who didn't have bad influences in their lives when they were growing up? I mean, sometimes, I think over 40, everybody needs a bad influence. But up until that point, you should keep your nose to the grindstone and not be pulled off the path. You got to go get the carrot first. Then you can go screw around and have some fun. All right. So, but here's the thing. We have this experimentation going on now and our children, this robotics revolution that is coming. Artificial intelligence is just pouring out of every pore on Wall Street. I'm talking stock-wise. I don't know if anybody has been keeping up on AI or keeping up on some of the newest news. But I'm going to tell you, on a daily basis, I get my artificial intelligence emails from, I think it's google.com/alerts. You could sign up for it. And it's just unbelievable. Amazon, Google, Salesforce, and leading roboticists on the golden age of AI out of Forbes magazine. The 11th annual MIT Tech Conference, a student-led event organized by the MIT Sloan Tech Club. Oh, there's a video. Well, turn that off. Plug that. had, quote, exponential technologies, quote, as its theme this year. Oh, go figure. I said that was going to be 2017. This is coming at us faster than we ever imagined. So this author says, here's what I learned from the event's morning sessions, which covered artificial intelligence, robotics, quantum computing, and biotechnology. Developing computer technology that does not require the use of eyes or hands is extremely liberating, says Rohit Prasad, vice president and head scientist for Alexa at Amazon. And we talked about Alexa yesterday, too. Alexa is helping teach our kids to be rude. Does not require... Oh, I just spilled coffee. It's dripping on my sock. It does not require anyone to say please or thank you. And you can say snotty things and Alexa will respond to you. I mean, how are we grooming future generations if we are not building morals and manners into these future technologies? And I mean, personally, I think we should smash them all. But I don't think that is going to happen. I don't plan to participate. But if the rest of the society is participating and being groomed by these technologies, then we should hope that they are at least helping to groom a better generation, since they don't talk to people anymore. We're going to be talking to our best friend, 2995. Little Johnny Robot in the cloud on your wearable device in the future. And it really is going to be that way. Ubiquitous computing will be everywhere. And eventually it's going to be in your head. Kurzweil, by 2030, nanobots connected to your neocortex to have you connected to the cloud 24/7. I mean, that is the plan. Is it my lunatic fantasy? It is the plan. And the absence of a computer screen forced Prasad and his team to tackle the most difficult problems of speech recognition. The inspiration for Alexa was a cloud-based AI, quote, similar to the Star Trek computer, unquote. Yeah, there you go, people. Making it easy for users to walk around the house and get some type of question answered or action performed. The rapid adoption of Alexa has been very humbling, says Prasad. And a crucial factor in his success was opening up to third-party developers. We've talked about that before. AI, across the board, and a lot of the manufacturers, IBM, and some of the Elon Musk stuff, and some of the Google stuff, they've all opened their back-end API, application programming interface, up to programmers, and they've offered it up for free for anyone to come in and start tinkering around. Here's our API, and you can integrate it into any of your applications that you're working on right now for free. Wink. And sure, they give it to you for free. But now you've just integrated their intelligence into your application that's going to be running for your business, touching your product. How much better infiltration could they have? You know, Trojan horse, once you've used their product and gotten it inside, and it's now been integrated into your product, that means you're forever going to be dependent on them. That means you're always going to use their product, and it's going to be known that it is their product, and it'll be learning from your product. It'll be learning. We talked yesterday about feeding the machine. Everything we do, all the interactions that we have online today and have always had, are feeding the machine. And this is the machine that is getting smarter every single day to eventually become a robot overlord. Except the sad fact of the matter is we're turning it into our robot overlord. We're making it better, faster, smarter. And we're feeding it data endlessly to be able to do more things. So the rate of adoption of Alexa was, quote-unquote, very humbling, says Prasad. Crucial factor in its success was opening up to third-party developers. And today there are more than 9,000 skills, quote-unquote skills, that Alexa users can select, of course, this is from third-party developers building little apps, for every moment and every occasion. Probably what they didn't, look, I don't have an Alexa and I don't plan to, but what it sounds like to me is they opened it up to third-party developers and then created some sort of little app store that you could probably charge 99 cents or whatever for your Alexa app. And it's hard to keep up with Alexa, even for her creator. A few days after the event, Amazon then disclosed that there are now over 10,000 Alexa skills. We can expect Alexa to visit new countries it recently launched in the UK and Germany. Oh, yay. You got now. Amazon Jeff Bezos, who's in bed with the CIA, built the CIA a parallel Amazon cloud. Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, the Alphabet agency mouthpiece. Yes, that Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos, who also has his own Blue Origin rocket program to go to space. Yep, that Jeff Bezos, very well connected. Jeff Bezos has an Alexa, a little Alexa spy that can go into everybody's home and listen to what is being said and perform 10,000 new skills around your home. Well, it recently now launched in the UK and Germany. And for each new country, Alexa needs not only to master the local language, but also its local information. So feed it more. Feed the machine. To succeed in the business world, it needs enterprise software developers. And with this in mind, Amazon has made it easier to build skills by providing a mass catalog of semantic elements, which would be words. So developers do not need to be proficient in machine learning. Prasad says, with the help of massive deep learning, Alexa adapts to speech patterns and continuously improves. We are at a golden age for AI, says Prasad, but we are only at the very beginning. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Of what the conversation can do. And I'm telling you, this is the scariest part, guys. We are seeing the birth of something right now that the all you're seeing is the pinky fingers sticking out of the egg. And it's like a big, horrifying room full of alien eggs. Remember that movie? When they walked in and they found where all the eggs were stashed. That was pretty horrifying. That's what's happening right now. We got all these real scary eggs that are hatching. And there are all these scary people who've been nurturing these eggs before they hatched. And now, as they're hatching, they're starting to teach them things. And as they teach them things, they get smarter and smarter. And we're kind of just standing here with our mouths open going, ah, frozen with fear, what do we do? And I don't know what to do, guys. Because as these all get out of their chrysalises or eggs and start to get smarter than us. They mentioned it yesterday in one of the stories, armies of robots showing up in your house being devious. We don't want that. We definitely don't want that. Anyway, Prasad says, with the help of massive deep learning, Alexa adapts to speech patterns and continuously improves. The winner of the Alexa Prize, which just like DARPA did, a grand challenge of, quote, building a social bot that can converse coherently and engagingly with humans on popular topics for 20 minutes, unquote, will be announced in November. Conversations with computers is a challenge. It is preoccupied Richard Socher, chief scientist at Salesforce for some time. Salesforce.com. CRM is their stock ticker. I've been watching them since 2004. They did hugely, hugely well. With lots of examples, computers can today learn to identify words and answer questions, but Socher agrees with Prasad that there is still a lot of progress to be made before actually they could understand what we say. But there is a lot of hype and excitement. And we should not extrapolate too far. But it is coming. in the not too distant future, talking intelligently about artificial intelligence without distracting. Hype and excitement calls for a definition of what we are talking about. When we think about AI, we often think about the smartest people in the room. Smart people play chess, but computers not only play chess better, which we keep finding out, they do everything better. They can also do many smart things better than smart people, such as calculate things faster or memorize more, or let's see, Dr. Watson, who can read a million pages in a second. There are other things that we do with our brain that people don't consider intelligence, but maybe we should. So here's what I want to look at today. We talked about robots becoming role models and what that's going to do to little Johnny. We talked about Facebook using emoticons to get a profile on you and start feeding data to the machine. Then we talked about Alphabet, Google's new toxic comment detector, to tamp down on those internet trolls and be able to direct the conversation to things that are important versus something that might be considered by the censors to be an insult. Like I said yesterday, what that does is it tamps down on the online conversation that is allowed to be had if they start censoring comments on web pages or on videos. I'm going to tell you something else we discovered yesterday. We found out in the Google forum, there are probably 7 or 8 other people now that are like, what is going on? Google is starting to crack down. So not only do they have a bully blocker with this toxic comment detector, you know, you put anything that is against the narrative and you are going to be considered a bully and your voice silenced. Well, YouTube has started a new thing for anyone who uploads more than, oh, I don't know, let's give it a number, I'm going to say 10 videos at a crack. They have started blocking people from uploads. So if anyone noticed, Pigmine 5 stopped uploading last night. He had to move to Pigmine 2. I have not gotten to anything to move any feeds anywhere. So nothing's going to feed anywhere except on YouTube till I get to it. But YouTube decided yesterday, and Pigmine channel is not the only channel. I found the Google forum, and there were a bunch of people who all the same things started happening. But what they've done is after so many videos, they say, hey, we think you might be spam. So we've decided we're going to block your uploads for about half an hour. And in a half an hour, we'll let you upload 3 more. And that's going to stop. And then you got to sit and wait another half an hour. And you can upload 3 more. Well, anyone who's been following the Pigmine channel for the last, oh, I don't know, I think it's 10 years this year, knows that he uploads more than 3 in a half an hour. It's a daily news archive that goes back to 2007. On the drives, and not sure what's going to happen if this becomes ubiquitous across all the channels. For now, changing the channel seems to fix it. They must have tagged Pigmine 5 as spam or somebody spamming it. But how disturbing is this? So just out of the blue, we on the same day, we read a story about Google's Alphabet working on this toxic language comment detector that they're going to start implementing on their online products. And bang. Now, I'm going to tell you something else that started happening right around the same time, and it was about 2 days ago. I've been getting steady emails. Ding, ding, ding. From shows, and there are about 4,900, and I don't know, I looked the other day, 4,905, I believe, on UCY's YouTube channel. They are shows that have been uploaded for the last 4-plus years. I don't know, in the beginning we weren't uploading because I had to do them all by hand, and it was absolutely impossible. And on a daily basis now, I'm probably getting 4 or 5 at a time that are coming in, and we are talking, going back to 2014, saying, hey, this show that you uploaded is not advertiser friendly. So the 2 pennies that we paid you every 6 months or so when somebody clicked on it is no longer going to be given to the network. Sorry, Charlie. We are going to pull any monetization on this video. And trust me, I mean, if on 5,000 videos you can make maybe $10, I would be surprised. But on the other hand, it's just the point. It's the point that now they're deciding whose narrative can be told and whose can't. Whose narrative is going to be allowed out there and whose can't. Whose narrative can be seen and whose can't. We're going to tell you now, you got to slow down there, Johnny, because you're uploading more than 3 videos in a half an hour. People can't handle that. Remember, they're coddled. They're rocking in a corner. You are shaking their world view. So we got to back it all off. So I started doing a little digging yesterday because this was pissing me off. This throttling back YouTube at 11 o'clock at night really ruined my freaking night last night and made the room start spinning when I realized all that that entailed to switch channels, at least on my part. Gonna be another 2 weeks of shit now I got to play with. And remember how to do it, because it's been months. I mean, I don't remember even. And I started looking into who is running that Google Jigsaw division, which is the division that they are now launching this toxic comment detector. So this is a toxic language, toxic comment detector for Google. Run through a company that is part of the Alphabet line called Jigsaw. Well, let's look at Jigsaw. Jigsaw, formerly called Google Ideas, is a technology incubator created by Google, now operated as a subsidiary of Alphabet. Based in New York City, Jigsaw is dedicated to understanding global challenges, ding-a-ling-a-ling, and then applying technological solutions from what? Oh, from counterterrorism, online censorship, and cyber attacks to the protecting access to information. Bullshit, I say. So, we're, you know, this whole story we're reading yesterday about the toxic comments potentially that are out there went on and on and on. Uh-oh, now everything's locking up. Oh, come on, baby. We got to get back. I clicked off the tab and now they got me. Well, hey, I'm going to play fire with fire. Hold on, let's go to the other machine. I'm going to go Jigsaw and Wiki. We looked at the toxic comment detector software yesterday. They froze everything up here. And what was really interesting about it is that every toxic comment that they were tossing out there in the MIT Technology Review article had to do with Israel. And I mean, look, guys, I mean, people are people. And I know there's lots of war crimes and things that happened throughout the past. I'm not even getting into that. It's just the point that this article was so pointed, just like tip of the spear, poking me in the eye as I was reading it yesterday. So pointed, where every negative comment was a negative comment about Israel that they were going to battle. It made me think, and I even said this yesterday, oh, I'm going to bet that the guy who's in charge probably has some financing or something from Israel. Well, very interesting, because we find out that the guy who's running the show, and he is the president of Jigsaw, came out of Stanford and Oxford University. His name is Jared Cohen. Jared Cohn is the president of Jigsaw, previously Google Ideas, and the adjunct senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. Previously, he served as a member of the Secretary of State's policy planning staff, originally as an advisor to Condoleezza Rice, and then later, so he was under George Porgy Bush, and then later to Hillary Clinton. Initially brought in by Condoleezza Rice as a member of the policy planning staff, he was one of the few staffers that then stayed under Hillary Clinton, later referenced in an article entitled Tweeting While Tehran Burns. Well, now that's weird. I searched Jigsaw Wikipedia on the other machine, and it blocked my search, and I just have a blank white Google page. All right, I guess they don't want us to read about Jigsaw on Wikipedia, because I got to tell you, it's beyond shocking. In the capacity of writing an article tweeting while Tehran burns, he focused, and this is Jared Cohn, he focused on counterterrorism, counter-radicalization, Middle East, Southeast Asia, internet freedom, and fostering oppression in repressive countries. And according to the New York Times Magazine, right before his departure from the State Department, Cohn was one of the participating architects that was labeled in the 2010 as 21st century statecraft, along with Richard Boley and several foreign service officers in the Department of State's Office of E-Diplomacy. In 2013, Jared Cohn was named by Time Magazine as one of the most 100 influential people as well. Now, isn't this interesting? This dude is running Alphabet's Jigsaw division that is working on the toxic language detector. This is really bizarre, but every one of my tabs is locked on this machine, and I cannot get to Jigsaw Wiki, and it won't even search it on this other computer. Come on. It's not that much of a super secret. It's not letting me go there. Everybody look it up and start reading Jigsaw Wikipedia. And it's the Jigsaw under Alphabet. All right, let's read about Cohn a little bit more, since that is up and he's pretty interesting. Cohn, he's well-connected, let's put it that way. Cohn was born in Weston, Connecticut. He received a bachelor's degree from Stanford in 2004, majoring in history and political science and minoring in African studies. He subsequently earned a master's degree in international relations from Oxford University, where he is a Rhodes Scholar. And, I mean, he definitely went to all the right places and met all the right people to be in the position that he is in. I bet they love him. Before graduating college, Cohn pursued interests in government and mass media. And I'm sure Obama really loved to have this dude on his team. He was intern at the U.S. State Department. And in 2004, he was a miscellaneous member of the crew for one of the episodes of a PBS Frontline documentary called Ghosts of Rwanda on the 10-year anniversary of the Rwanda genocide. Following his internship and graduation, Cohn then served as a Secretary of State's Policy Planning Staff from 2006 to 2010 at 24 years of age. What? And then he began his service began after his internship under Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice during the Bush administration. Cohn was one of the few members of the policy planning kept by Hillary Clinton when she moved in as Secretary of State, and he played a role in helping shape counter-radicalization strategies and advised on U.S. policy toward Iran and the Middle East. And beginning in April of 2009, Cohn aided delegations focused on connecting technology executives with stakeholders in Iraq, Russia, Mexico, Congo, and Syria. What does that mean? Connecting technology executives with stakeholders in Iraq, Russia, Mexico, Congo, and Syria. Was that some of that pay for business that happened out of the State Department? I don't know what that's about. That's kind of an odd statement. In the midst of the 2009 protest in Iran, and this is after Obama took office and they thought we were going to bail them out with their Arab Spring, and we didn't. Obama just stood there and watched them all get prosecuted. Cohn sought the support to support the opposition in Iran, and he contacted Twitter requesting that the company not perform planned maintenance that would have temporarily shut down service in Iran because the protesters were using Twitter to maintain contact with the outside world. So this dude is the dude who made sure Twitter stayed open in Iran so they could tweet their Arab Spring that got squashed, that we didn't support. And remember, we talked about that, about them utilizing social media to accomplish these color revolutions that Brandon Turberville talks about so often. They are financed by billionaires to destabilize other countries that we want knocked off the chessboard, Iran being number one. So anyway, while this dude, Cohn, served as policy planning staff, he also became an advisor to someone named Richard Holbrooke, who was the first special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan. Well, how convenient is that? He took several trips with Holbrooke to Afghanistan, where he helped develop some of the early strategic communication strategies. Cohn was also among the early adopters of social media in the U.S. government. Oh, wow, he doesn't sound like a plant. I can't even believe that this guy is now working on Google's hate speech detector. Come on. I mean, is this a joke? When I looked up his name to see who was running Jigsaw after the show, I just couldn't believe it. So then in April of 2010, Cohn had the third largest number of Twitter followers in the U.S. government behind Barack Obama and John McCain. Well, that's really good company to be in. And by September 2013, he was in the top 20. Something to be proud of and hang your hat on there, Johnny. So Cohn left the State Department's Planning and Policy Department in September of 2010, and he became an adjunct senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, focusing on counter-radicalization. He was then hired, right after that, as the first director of Google Ideas, which is a new branch within Google that started in October of 2010. Cohn is the author of three books. The first one is called The New Digital Age, Reshaping the Future of People, Nations, and Businesses. Oh, that was his book, co-authored between Cohn and Google executive chairman Eric Schmidt. And a New York Times bestseller. I mean, are you hearing this agenda? So let's all get into bed. If there was ever any question that this is being manipulated and we are being drawn in by this dangling carrot and led right to the edge of the cliff, well, it should be over now. This book that he wrote with Eric Schmidt called The New Digital Age, Reshaping the Future of People, Nations, and Businesses. This book considers the geopolitical future when 5 billion additional people come online, and that is the Google Internet drones for Africa and all of the rural areas around the world. And the presumed terrorism, war, identity theft, conflict, and altered relations between nations results. And this book grew out of an article called The Digital Disruption, which was published by the Foreign Affairs magazine in November 2010. Cohn and Schmidt suggest that technology will rewrite the relationship between states and their citizens in the 21st century. Oh, Julian Assange, which I found it interesting that they cited him in this Wikipedia. But Julian Assange pops up and he critically critiqued the book, saying, quote, "It proselytizes the role of technology in reshaping the world's people and nations into likenesses of the world's dominant superpower, whether they want to be reshaped or not. The prose is terse, the argument confident, and the wisdom banal. This book is balefully seminal work in which neither the author has the language to see, much less to express the titanic centralizing evil they are constructing." Unquote. Well, high five, Julian Assange, because that is exactly what they are doing. Cohen's first book was titled 100 Days of Silence, America and the Rwanda Genocide, published in 2006. His second book, Children of Jihad, A Young American's Travel Among the Youth of the Middle East, was published in October of 2007. And he and co-author Eric Schmidt published The Dark Side of the Digital Revolution in the Wall Street Journal in 2013 and an article in 2012 for the Washington Post called Technology Can Be Harnessed to Fight Drug Cartels in Mexico. What? Which grew out of a trip. The two, so I guess they ran a global road trip. The two, Eric Schmidt and Cohen, took to Juarez. So there you go, people. I don't even know what to say about that. So if we go in now, let's see. I'm going to go on machine number three, and we are going to see if we can get to the Wikipedia. All right, it took three machines, but I am here. So Google Jigsaw, so we heard about Eric Cohn. So he is the head honcho that was put into place back in 2010 to run this division that is responsible for the toxic language detector. Jigsaw, formerly Google Ideas, is a technology incubator created by Google and now operated as a subsidiary of Alphabet Inc. Based in New York City, Jigsaw is dedicated to understanding global challenges and applying technological solutions from counter-extremism, ding, online censorship, and cyber attacks to protect access to information. Jared Cohn, formerly with the Policy Planning Committee at the U.S. State Department, is the founder and president of Jigsaw and was formerly the founder and director of Google Ideas. In 2010, Eric Schmidt approached Jared Cohn to lead Google Ideas as a, quote, think/do tank to research issues at the intersection of technology and geopolitics, and has worked on projects intended to protect activists and independent media from cyber attacks, or so he says. Google Ideas, and you know, quote unquote, independent media is only going to be overseas, and it's only going to be to support them so they can have a color revolution that then topples the government and flicks them off the chessboard. I mean, if we watch how this has been spreading across the Middle East and Europe, it's been a mix 'em up. And we now have a big disaster over there. Nobody knows which way is up. Everybody's country has been scrambled. Now they're all trying to find their identities again, trying to figure out where they sit on the board. We got this guy in office here that just wants to mix things up even more. Terrorists under every bed. And nobody trusts each other anymore. Google Ideas also set a moonshot goal of ending all censorship within a decade. Yes, we're going to end all censorship, but we are going to release a product That is a toxic language detector for the internet because, hey, when you make Johnny feel bad, that is not considered free speech. Under the leadership of Jared Cohen, Ideas brought together, and this is Google Ideas, now known as Jigsaw, brought together a team of Google engineers, research scientists, project managers, and policy experts to address these issues. And the team hosted a number of conferences, most recent of which was the Conflict in a Connected World Roundtable series in partnership with the Council of Foreign Relations Center of Preventative Action. He is like a direct connect to the mothership, as Hillary Clinton called the CFR. It has come under scrutiny for its links with the U.S. State Department and its quote unquote, and here we go, regime change activities. And that is exactly what they have been doing, not fighting for free speech online. They've been directing the narrative to create quote unquote regime changes, i.e., revolutions that turn the whole country into, I mean, look what happened in Ukraine. Turn the whole country into a big flaming Molotov cocktail for a while until they got tired. In February 2016, Eric Schmidt announced in a Medium post the expansion of Google Ideas to a technology incubator named Jigsaw. And according to Schmidt, the new name reflects our belief that a collaborative problem solving yields the best solution. And the team's mission is to, quote, use technology to tackle the toughest geopolitical challenges, from countering violent extremism to thwarting online censorship. Again, this is such a joke because we read it yesterday. They're going to stop allowing comments that make people feel bad to migrating the threats associated with digital attacks. And if they're involved in cyber attacks and trying to stop cyber attacks, you better believe that there is a dotted line between them and Cyber Patrol. Jigsaw will also leverage more of Alphabet's engineering talent and resources to build more sophisticated products. And remember, one of their engineering talents happens to be Ray Kurzweil. Project Shield, this is one of their projects, is a free anti-distributed denial of service that is offered by Jigsaw to websites that have, quote, media, elections, and human rights related content. Right. Sign up for this free service so we know who you are and we'll make sure it puts you on our radar. There's another product called uProxy. It's an extension for Chrome and Firefox, which allows users to access the web via web proxy. Of course, web proxy is going to hide your IP address, but again, it is a Google service, so Google will know who you are, even if you're trying to log in and enable a user as somebody else. So make sure you sign up for that one. There's another one called Conversation AI. It is a software developed by Jigsaw that is, quote, designed to use machine learning to automatically spot the language of abuse and harassment. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. That is this toxic comment detector. It was called Conversation AI, according to a Wired profile. Quote, feed a string of text into its Wikipedia harassment detection engine, and it can, with what Google describes as more than 92% certainty and only a 10% false positive rate, come up with a judgment. Ding, a judgment that matches a human test panel as to whether or not that line of comment represents an attack. Jigsaw has partnered with the New York Times as well as Wikipedia, both of which will be the very first platforms to employ the harassment detector on discussion pages and comment threads to secure millions of comments that have helped, and here we go, train the machine learning software. Ding, ding. Everything you put into the machine is teaching the machine. So every time you put an abusive comment, apparently on the New York Times or Wikipedia, it is teaching the toxic comment detector what to look for. There is another project called Redirect Method. It is an open source methodology developed by Jigsaw that leverages Google's AdWords platform. Oh, yes. and YouTube to target potential ISIS recruits. Now, again, this is Google. Google's Jigsaw, the guy connected to the CFR and the State Department. Yes, they are targeting ISIS recruits using Google AdWords and YouTube and then dissuade them from joining the group. How do they do that? Redirect, which was based off of interviews with ISIS defectors and jailed recruits. Maybe he did that on his trip to Afghanistan. Places advertising alongside results for any keywords or phrases that Jigsaw has determined would attract people from the ISIS community and have them search for it. They then put ads to Arabic and English language YouTube channels down the side after you search for ISIS-like videos that then pull together pre-existing videos that Jigsaw believes can effectively undo ISIS's brainwashing for the YouTube watcher. Clips like testimonials from former extremists, imams denouncing ISIS corruption of Islam, and surreptitiously filmed clips inside of the group's dysfunctional caliphate in northern Syria and Iraq. Jigsaw claims that during a pilot project conducted in early 2016, its advertising was 3 to 4 times more effective than a normal anti-brainwashing campaign whose click spent more than twice as long viewing the most effective playlist than the best estimates of how long people view YouTube as a whole. Jigsaw published the detailed steps for this methodology under a Creative Commons license on GitHub. So who knew that Google, under Jigsaw, was connected to the State Department and the Council on Foreign Relations and was working on anti-brainwashing ISIS recruits, as well as creating toxic language detectors and setting off color revolutions around the world? I mean, this is on, you know what, like I said before, people, pull on one little thread and see what happens. This is what happened to me yesterday. Other projects that are out there for Jigsaw include Password Alert, Unfiltered News, and Digital Attack Map, as well as something called Montage, which has now become Storyful. Password Alert protects against phishing attacks. According to Wired, the company developed it specifically for Syrian activists targeted by government-friendly hackers. But when it proved effective, it was rolled out to all of Google's users. Yeah, you better believe it. And Unfiltered News uses Google News data, yeah, that same Google News that has the checkbox verified, to show users what topics are being underreported or are popular in regions around the world. And then the Digital Attack Map displays the top digital attacks in the world real time. Montage is a program that lets war correspondents and nonprofits crowdsource the analysis of a YouTube video to track conflicts and gather evidence of human rights violations. And additionally, in May 2016, Jigsaw announced that it had partnered with who? Oh, Vice News. You know, I got to tell you, I have questions. Who is funding Vice? And a friend and I looked it up the other day. My dad and I had watched a documentary on Vice over the weekend where they were talking about Hacking Team. We've done stories on Hacking Team before, how they had been partnering with governments around the world. They had found vulnerabilities in software that then they wrote applications to exploit to be able to get in to the back end of a machine and surveil and monitor you without you ever knowing. Then they sold those capabilities to any government out there who wanted to pay for it and wanted to spy on its citizenry or others. Well, Vice had done this really nice expose about all these Day Zero exploits and Hacking Team and things that had happened and governments that were involved. But I really got a question. Like, Vice gets all this access that is quite exclusive. They're going into third world nations in the documentary that was after that, they were interviewing like head of the power plants in the Ukraine, where they had gotten some sort of hack attack and all the power was taken out, and they're just kind of casually in the middle of a war zone doing an interview. I'm like, who the hell is funding these people? Well, it ends up there's some sort of conglomerate between Canadian and New York-based funding. There's a bunch of different news agencies that are partially invested as well. I did not see a government connection, but I'm gonna tell you, somewhere in the back end, they have to have some sort of international access to get them into all these other countries. And guess what? May of 2016, Jigsaw partnered with Vice News. And guess what? Vice News gets all their access. Maybe they're getting it through the Council on Foreign Relations in the State Department. As we found out, the connections here exist. They partnered to do a five-part documentary series called Blackout. And I wonder if that is part of what I saw, the Ukraine, where all the power went out for days on end and they hacked the power plants to examine free expression around the world. So there you have it, guys. That is a subsidiary formerly called Google Ideas, now called Jigsaw, that lives underneath Alphabet with Eric Schmidt as the cohort with this Jared Cohn. And they are very deeply, deeply involved with the State Department and manipulating global views and government uprisings. All right. Well, here I think this is where we're going to end it. If only AI could save us from ourselves. Google has an ambitious plan to use artificial intelligence to weed out abusive comments and defang online mobs. The technology isn't up to that challenge, but it will help the internet's best behaving communities to function better. Humans have broken the internet. Cyberbullying, harassment, and social shaming, as well as the sheer unpleasantness, plague such sites as Twitter and Reddit, especially if you happen to attract the wrong sorts of attention. Well, hey, give it up for Johnny's Hurt Feelings. The company that runs online services typically squeezes between charges of indifference to harassment, to suppression of free speech, but now Google thinks that it can use AI to lessen this tragedy of the digital commons. Technology incubator called Jigsaw says it intends to spot and remove digital harassment with an automated program called Conversation AI. Jigsaw's president, Jared Cohn, says, quote, "I want to use the best technology that we have at our disposal to begin to take on trolling and other nefarious tactics that give hostile voices disproportional weight and to do everything we can to level the playing field." So I would have to say, after Hillary Clinton lost the election and they blamed it all on fake news, well, fake news seemed to have a louder voice than the real fake news that they were making. And so we got to make sure we squash down on that. What did they call it? Trolling. You don't believe in the mantra about vaccines or about climate change? Well, you are going to be considered hostile. It is gutsy for Google to take this on, and it is different from some of its previous work. Conversation AI is an offshoot of one of the most successful of Google's moonshot projects called Google Brain. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. It has helped revolutionize the field of machine learning through large-scale neural networks and given Google advantages such as software that is more skillful than humans at recognizing images. And we found that out. That was cats. But conversation AI won't be able to defeat online abuse, though Jigsaw's stated goal is to, quote, "fight the rise of online mobs," unquote. The program itself is far more modest. Conversation AI will primarily streamline the community moderation that today is performed by humans. So even if it is unable to neutralize the worst behavior online, it might foster more and better discourse on some sites. You're being mean, Johnny. We're going to shut you down. Jigsaw starting with the New York Times, where it'll be rolled out in a few months, and this article was from December, to help the company manage its online comments. Human moderators currently review every comment published, and right now, Conversation AI is reading 18 million of them at a crack, learning to detect the and each individual category of comment to get rejected. It would be considered insubstantial. So insubstantial comments don't get allowed to be printed. Off-topic comments aren't allowed to be printed either. Spam, incoherent comments, inflammatory comments, obscene, an attack on the commenter, an attack on the author, or an attack on the publisher. Are you kidding me? Free speech has officially gone out a window. The Times' goal is not necessarily to reduce abuse in its comments, but instead it hopes to reduce the human moderators' workloads. The New York Times site poses very different problems from the real-time free-for-all of Twitter and Reddit, given the limitations of machine learning as it exists today. Conversation AI right now cannot possibly fight abuse in the internet's open, wide spaces, but don't worry about it because they will in the future. For dazzling achievements in machine learning, it still has not cracked fully the human language where patterns can be found, and it can be diabolically elusive. The linguistic problem in abuse detection in context and Conversation AI's comment analysis does not model the entire flow of a discussion. It just matches individual comments against what it has learned, good or bad. But don't worry about it, because I will guarantee you Ray Kurzweil be able to help them out with natural language processing and some of the work that he has done at Google Brain. A dedicated Twitter troll will no doubt find a novel way of expressing abuse that evades systems like Conversation AI. So make sure you get to work on that. Let's find a way to get around it. And so, where does this all end? Well, it ends with one potential downside. Censorship has officially come to the internet, thanks to Google.